The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
And welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast with me, Steve Cordasco. Joining me is my good friend and just a brilliant, brilliant attorney when it comes to tax litigation and white-collar representation for those that get themselves jammed up with the complicated world of taxation. Ian Kaminsky, who is an attorney, partner at Fox Rothschild, more than 35 years experience representing corporations and individuals in civil, criminal tax litigation, white-collar criminal defense, and complex corporate and commercial disputes, and often puts a lot of time into the University of Pennsylvania, teaching the next generation of bright individuals that'll guide us. Ian, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We're getting lots and lots of feedback from people asking about Trump's tax returns. Supreme Court rulings on Trump's tax returns are fresh. You've been in it, on it, know about it. Can you share with us some layman's terms of what all this means and what it means to Trump and what it means to just average everyday individuals are hearing the headline news?
Two decisions that everybody had been waiting for. One dealt with a suit by resulting from subpoenas issued by the district attorney of the county of New York. So that one's Trump versus Vance. And the second suit dealt with congressional subpoenas for records of Trump's businesses. And they both cases wound their way up to the Supreme Court. And what happens once in a while in litigation is everybody stakes out positions which are so extreme that it makes it easier for the court to resolve the issues. So in the congressional case for the subpoenas, Congress staked out the position that they can issue subpoenas and they can just say the subpoena has to be for a legislative purpose, not an investigative purpose, because the Congress is not part of the executive branch. It doesn't bring prosecutions. It can impeach them, but it can't bring prosecutions. So it's got to say it's for a legislative purpose to either amend or create new legislation. And in that one, Congress decided to stake out a position, which was we don't have to support this at all. We can issue a subpoena and you can't question us. Well, you can guess how that went at the Supreme Court. So that decision came out 7-2. Which is Congress has a right to issue subpoenas, but the judiciary branch has a right to look at the subpoenas, and that the subpoenas have to be supported by a reason other than you're just stating it. So on that one, the court remanded because it was an extreme position and said Congress can come in and they can provide the detail which has to be submitted to show that there is a valid legislative purpose. And that case will continue on for a while. What that means is it's less likely in a grand jury proceeding to have a leak than in a congressional proceeding, as we all know. And therefore, in the congressional proceeding, it's unlikely that any records are going to be turned over before the election. Of course, you got to go back to lower court. There's got to be briefing now on what the congressional purpose was. Regardless of how that decision prevails, you're going to go back up probably at least to the intermediate appellate court about whether they're applying the Supreme Court guidance correctly. So the likelihood of anybody seeing out of Congress or a leak from Congress any of those records before the election is probably nil. The other decision was an equally extreme position. This was subpoena by a state district attorney seeking records of Trump's personal records. So that argument percolated up to the Supreme Court as well, and that was also a 7-2 decision. But on this one, back to the actual and early cases in the 1700s, and basically and said there that nobody's above the law. So the federal law had been well established for a lot of years. You know, there'd been you know, interplay with President Nixon. There was interplay with President Clinton. There's been plenty of presidents who had to respond to subpoenas while in office, certainly at the federal level. What they hadn't decided before is whether the same rule should apply to a state subpoena, and they said it should. There's no difference between federal and state. And they said there's no reason for heightened scrutiny either. Just before everybody gets up excited that these records will be turned over in 2 weeks, they said, but we're not considering. The president does have arguments he can make. He can make an argument that the subpoena is being used to influence his policy as president, and that would be an improper purpose under the Supremacy Clause. And they also held that he could argue that he can't conduct his office because the subpoena would take so much time and effort that, in effect, it would defeat his ability to act as president. So that's also going back below. If you want to read tea leaves on that one, that's not going to be easy for the president's counsel to establish that he can't. I think he's going to have trouble establishing that it's being used for political purpose, the state attorney general subpoena, the state subpoena. And in terms of arguing he can't act as president if he has to respond to a subpoena for records, we'll see. What we'll do is we'll buy him some more time.
There have been others in the past who don't turn over their financial records. So right. Help me with this. What does this really mean to us?
I think this is, to use a non-legal term, a mixed bag of decisions. The court restrained Congress for political reasons, if it is for political reasons, from seeking financial records. So there's something there that Congress has to act appropriately.
It's totally for political reasons.
Well, I understand, but they're going to have to show a legislative purpose. They're going to show a legislative purpose at the end of the subpoena. At the state level...
Look, it looks to me as if they're trying to create a barrier. They're trying to get in the way of somebody doing their job. Whether it's a Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. They're getting in the way of getting the job done.
That's a political response. On the other one, the state AG... Right. This is the state. I'm sorry, Vance. You know, the state, the one from New York. That's different. That's different. That will open up the door in the future. It may be problematic, but the court has now said that a subpoena from any state prosecuting office has to be honored. For these are private records. These aren't public records. Now you're talking about as private records, not records of the administration. You're talking about as financial records. Mm-hmm. That's the other distinction they drew. Can proceed during administration. What they pointed out in both opinions is that this stuff had been going on for years, and in every other administration, especially on the one dealing with Congress, it had always been worked out between the parties without this kind of war.
You and I had a conversation, I don't know, maybe a few months back, and we talked about data analytics and social media and all that kind of stuff, and you mentioned something to me about the IRS data analytics unit. Can you share with us what that means?
I actually did a program which was at a tax law conference in Washington, and the IRS made a presentation. Now, this is, if you believe in privacy, some of this stuff is scary. They have brought in, since the IRS audit rate has been going down for years because of lack of resources, their partial answer to, now the IRS, in the last year or two is getting a bigger budget. We now have deficits again. We have big deficits again. We're going to have a huge deficit, excuse me, in 2020. And they've decided maybe it's prudent now to start collecting, putting some money into enforcement to collect taxes. But their answer to part of this, when there wasn't sufficient audits going on and sufficient referrals like there had been in past years, was to form this data analytics unit. And it's to help them select cases to investigate. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they have a unit called Research Applied Analytics and Statistics. And they're putting together algorithms for types of profiles of individuals or businesses, where if you fit that profile in these algorithms, they're going to select you for criminal investigation. And it's only going to be the next step. They're going to select you for audit doing the same type of data, because if they decide the criminal doesn't look good, they'll send it down to the civil. And they were talking about it, the program. They made it clear, the program, they weren't going to reveal the secret sauce, however they were phrasing it, the secret sauce. But below that level below, they have a program for trust fund taxes. I don't know exactly what they wouldn't say exactly what they're finding, but they have a program. Maybe if you report a lot of taxes, I guess in 1 year, you don't report any in the next year, or the opposite, report like no taxes in year one and a lot of taxes in year two. To give a simple example for the audience, the analytics will pull that business out and you go audit them or investigate them to why the business taxes are so different. They have another program for U.S. citizens living abroad. Apparently, they can profile somebody living in, pick a foreign country, you know, Europe, France, England.
We'll do Costa Rica because that's what most of our listeners. No, I'm going to tell you why Costa Rica.
Okay.
Because many of our listeners who listen to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast have told me if Joe Biden gets elected, they're moving to Costa Rica. So can you use Costa Rica?
Okay, so Costa Rica. But if you're a U.S. person, you got to report your worldwide taxes, as we all know. But they have a program. If you move out of the country, you have to pay an exit tax. That's a different program. We'd have to talk about that separately.
Is it like the New Jersey state tax? If you move out of New Jersey, you have to pay a tax.
They just indicted somebody, a federal criminal indictment, for somebody who was chiseling on his exit tax. You have to declare your assets and actually pay a tax for your stock. For instance, if you own stock, it's all sold in the year you leave the country and pay tax on it. He didn't do it and he hid assets and they just charged him. But they have a program apparently where, I don't know, and again, they wouldn't tell you the secret sauce, but if you're living abroad and you report X dollars in 1 year or Y dollars in another year, or they're getting information from foreign banks that you have accounts there and you're not showing anything. I'll give you an example. Say you have a return. You moved to Costa Rica. You're still a U.S. citizen. And you file a return showing $30,000 of income, interest, and dividends. And it's out of two banks in Costa Rica. If they get a form from a bank in France where it shows you've got a $2.5 million, $3 million balance, you got a problem. And that's the kind of data they can put together now with these programs. And I listened in on a program on Monday where they're expanding the data analytics program to pick up microcap stocks, biofuels, food distributors, whistleblower referrals, captive insurance. Those are the future initiatives. And they're going to use these programs, which apparently they must believe are successful. They're going to be putting the resources in to target without an agent coming out to see you first, something that looks funny on the return, quote unquote, and to bring investigations. So they won't only be, and it's worse than that. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal that they're buying commercial database information. There was actually a couple articles. One was that they were able to get data off of Facebook. That came out over the winter. And there was a recent Wall Street Journal article that they were tracking individuals by purchasing commercial databases that record the locations of cell phones. So this just came out in the Wall Street Journal, was updated June 19th, that they had that they purchased a commercial database, and the commercial database has cell phone location information, and they were buying that so the IRS could figure out where you were on certain days. So if they interviewed you and you said you were in this location so you could take a business deduction, they could determine from your cell phone whether you were there or not. Wait to hear this one. There's a commercial service that, number one, gets feeds from law enforcement with license plate numbers. Two, goes around, can take, I think it was 30 frames a second. Some truck, it goes around and takes license plate frames at 30 frames a second for license plates, puts them into this database, then leases it back to law enforcement so they can figure out, forget the addition to the cell phone, they can figure out where your car was. It starts getting, it wouldn't be just privacy people. It starts getting anybody nervous, at least gets me nervous, I'll put it on a personal level, that there's too much data available out there for law enforcement.
Well, that means we should buy stock in that company that makes those license plate covers that you can't take a picture of it because it makes the numbers cloudy. They're legal.
Right. That's a different issue. Then there's a third way.
I'm trying to figure out how to make money for people out of this thing.
Yeah. There's another case out of the... it just came out of the circuit, which is in New England, called the First Circuit, where they just upheld a poll camera where the government put in, and it always starts with a drug case or some other bad facts, but it could be for anybody. They put a poll and a camera and a telephone pole across your street. They put a camera in with a zoom feature. So if you don't have your blinds down, they can look into your house and use the Zoom feature to see who's in the house and what you're doing. And the camera was there for months. And the court said that was okay. So even if you're not, you know, even if you think government has a right to accumulate some data, this is the kind of thing that gets, you know, gets everybody nervous. So you got license plates, you got cell phone data, you got them looking into your window. The technology has moved so fast that, you know, either the courts or Congress is going to have to do something to protect the privacy rights in some of these areas. We won't have any, or perhaps we may not have privacy left.
Boy, I tell you, it sounds like you picked the right profession, because you're going to be defending a lot of people, it seems like. Let's shift gears. The IRS is increasing efforts on auditing high net worth individuals. You wanted to bring that to the table today and talk about that. Share with our audience what's happening on the front of the high net worth individual with regards to the IRS.
One would think, for years, one would think, just as a matter of logic, that the IRS would be able to get more revenue in if they audited someone, you know, make up a number, earning over $1 million a year than somebody earning $30,000 a year. Except that the report got issued June 22nd, and Treasury has this internal investigation unit called TIGTA, T-I-G-T-A, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. And the piece was on the large case examination selection method results in no change rates, which means what it sounds like. Whatever they're doing, they have, it's another secret sauce thing, where the IRS has this has always had for years reasons to pull returns for audit. And whatever the methodology they've been using, they're ending up pulling returns where they're not getting any money in, and it's costing a lot of resources just to review the returns. Mm-hmm. The IRS announced a month or two ago, they're coming out July 15th with a significant round of high net worth audits. And you just hope that whatever they're selecting, they're going to follow some of the recommendations, and there's a 40 page document of recommendations of what they're doing wrong. So hopefully we're not going to see the taxpayers' money wasted. And if they start this whole initiative, they're going to select better returns with better prospects to find something. At least they get some money from all the effort.
What is the definition of high net worth, though? That's random to a certain extent.
That's
correct?
Random. There's probably some number they're going to use for the new audits they're starting, but I haven't seen anything. That was just oral that they were going to start quote high net worth audits.
Okay.
And this piece that just came out, they're getting no changes. They were getting no changes in over half the audits, and half the resources they're putting in are just wasted. So you hope they can do better this go round, because it's not like we don't have a budget deficit, and it's not like everybody shouldn't pay their fair share. And if there's something to audit out there, you hope they're going to use the resources effectively and at least get something for the effort. Mm-hmm. The high net worth audit took 200, 300, 400, 500 hours of man time, because the returns are more complicated. Yep. So you just hope whoever they're rolling out the stuff in another week, it'll be productive.
I mean, look, they're still working on Trump's after, 30 years?
I mean, that's what he says. He says he can't release his. I think he said when he got at the time of the election, he couldn't reach the return because he's subject to audit every year. Until the audit's over, he can't release anything. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been the mantra ever since. Mm-hmm. So right now he had a setback today. He had one up, maybe one down out of these cases. And at some point, some of this financial information is going to get released, but it's still going to take some time to go back to that subject for a minute.
Ian Kaminsky, thanks so much for being part of today's Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. If you're in trouble, Ian Kaminsky's the guy to go to. He's an attorney, partner at Fox Rothschild, over 35 years experience representing corporations and individuals in civil and criminal tax litigation, white collar criminal defense, and complex corporate and commercial disputes. So if you need help or you're worried out there, give Ian a call. If you've taken subsidies for your company and you're worried about potential audits coming your way or trouble coming your way, Ian's a good go-to person to talk to you about that. We didn't have time today to get into that, but Ian, promise me you'll be able to come back. Thanks so much for being part of today's program.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Steve Cordasco. Thanks for being part of the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. You can reach me directly at asksteve.com. at cfnplan.com. If you have questions on what we've discussed today or want to take the conversation a little bit further or need some clarity or just a topic that you would like us to bring to the next Your Life, Your Wealth podcast, more than happy to have a conversation with you, to talk to you, and to hear about what's on your mind, what's relevant and pertinent that we could help with here at the Your Life, Your Wealth show. Have a great week and looking forward to talking to you again on the next episode of Your Life, Your Wealth. I'm Steve Cardasco.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cardasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.